Thanks for tuning in on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We have a tech update for you today with our tech expert, Jesse LeGrew. We'll talk with Jesse about how to keep old cell phones secure. Jesse is the Chief Information Security Officer at Madison College. He's also a volunteer handler for the SANS Internet Storm Center. Maybe we'll hear a little about that as well as we move along today. And, of course, he'll talk about location technology with us as well and answer your questions. What questions do you have? Are you sharing your phone's location? Have you noticed targeted ads on your device tailored to where you live? Let us know the computer problems you're having. You can call us at 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Jesse LeGrew, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Good to be here.
So, generally, how vulnerable are our cell phones to hackers and data theft?
They could be pretty vulnerable for a variety of reasons. It's really the same kinds of challenges we even see with our normal laptops and desktops. For most people, we're using smartphones, which are really mini computers. They can do pretty much everything our laptops or desktops can do, including checking email, browsing the web. And one of the most common ways people try to really socially engineer or attack individuals is through links in email, links in text messages. And so any of those links can easily be clicked on a phone. And actually, just due to kind of the mobile nature of the device, you may not be able to as easily see the same information that you would see on your desktop or web-based email client. You might be more inclined actually to click on something and for it to go to a bad place. So a lot of those same risks are really there with our mobile devices. And due to the fact they're mobile, that we have limited visibility in terms of what we can just see on the screen.
Yeah.
In some cases, it's more likely that we're going to click on something that we don't want to or give information that otherwise we wouldn't want.
Well, let's take a look at older phones for a second. You know, there is a sort of a death date for a lot of these phones. What are the security risks of owning an older phone?
Yeah, especially if they're older smartphones, since they are so capable, there's just a lot more risk. The devices can do more. You might be storing more data on them. And so if somebody does get access to that information, it can be a little bit riskier. When using an older device, there's a few different challenges. One, you may not be able to get the latest software updates, which usually include security updates as well. That's for the phone, in addition to any of the applications you have installed. For most newer devices, there's usually an app store or a Play Store, depending on your operating system, where you can install the latest applications and also install the latest updates. If there's an older version of the phone, it may not allow those updates. It also may not allow installing new applications just due to the version of the software that you have. So it kind of limits some of the functionality. It also limits some of the updates that are available. But for applications you have installed, they might still work. You might still be able to check email. You might still be able to browse the web. But if you are using outdated versions, that risk of clicking on something and some kind of vulnerability or basically bad code that might exist in one of those apps could be taken advantage of. So you just have less options to protect yourself by making sure you have the most up-to-date version of software that might include fixes and resolving security bugs.
So the security updates, they're probably based on attacks or previous attacks or just something that they've uncovered on their own, the companies?
Yeah, usually it's a combination of attacks that are seen in the wild. So there are a variety of individuals that will just, hey, I saw this. You might want to fix this in your newest version release. And so that could be just a really great end user that wants to make sure that the vendor fixes something so it protects themselves and others. It could also be what they call bug bounty programs. And some organizations will actually offer to individuals that like to dive into this kind of technology, we'll pay you a little bit of money if you find some kind of vulnerability or some kind of security flaw with our software. So that actually, it's a really good incentive for people to actually look for these problems so they can actually get a little bit of money and they're actually able to help the software developer fix bugs. And in other cases, it's the software vendor. They might be alerted by problems with software crashing, or they might actually have an internal team looking for these vulnerabilities themselves. You might notice that if you have a program crash on your device, maybe it's on your phone, maybe it's on your laptop or desktop, it says, hey, by the way, looks like you had an error. Would you like to report this? So sometimes it's actually through those reports. So as end users, we might supply that information so that the vendor can fix those problems. And in other cases, it's actually, and a lot of companies will do this, they'll basically pay somebody to break into their stuff. So here's some money, please see what you can do in order to find some kind of vulnerability, find some kind of flaw, let us know about it, and that will help us find a way to address it, and then we'll have you test it again. And that's usually called penetration testing or offensive security testing, which a lot of companies regularly pay for because they really do want that outside expertise to help them understand what software flaws might be there.
So, you know, I would guess that there are times when you would know immediately that your phone has been hacked, but there might be other times when you don't realize it or don't understand it. How do you tell if your older phone has been hacked?
Yeah, and that's really a challenging one. So even with a smartphone, which has a lot of capabilities, it's a little bit more challenging to understand really what's running on the device. And there are, unfortunately, third-party applications you can install to get a better idea of what's running in the background. But it takes a lot of time to kind of translate that. Because I would say most people don't know what's running in the background on their phone. If anyone was given a list of, here are the 50 applications running on your phone, well, which one of them are valid, which ones are not? Even for experts, that's really challenging to know. And so there's a lot of research that goes behind the scenes. If it ends up being, let's say, a good attack, no one's going to know. That's really the ideal state. If somebody's trying to get into your device or take advantage of something, their goal is to not make you aware. They want to make sure that you think everything's fine. The best solution in those cases is to really get outside expertise. There is some security software that can be installed on smartphones that can be a little bit more problematic. One of the biggest recommendations I would give, and this is for anyone, whether it's a completely up-to-date system or it's an older smartphone that can't get updates anymore, uninstall old programs that you don't feel you need anymore. And that can be a bigger task for most because it's really easy to install applications on a phone. And so you might have tens or even hundreds of applications on your phone. But I do recommend going through uninstalling the ones you don't feel you need or the ones you don't use. A lot of newer phones will actually do this automatically. So if you haven't used an app in a while, it'll effectively block it from running. So if there is an issue, you won't notice. But I think that's probably the best thing you can do for an older phone is really kind of limit the risk by kind of limiting the use. If you don't check email on an out-of-date device, well, there's no one that's going to be able to take advantage of an accidental click from a phishing email link because you're not looking at it. So there are other things that can help minimize the risk. The downside is, well, it kind of limits the effectiveness of that device. It limits the usefulness of that device. So why would you want to do that? But there are a variety of cases where that can be kind of the reality. You might not be able to get a new phone for a variety of reasons, either because you just really like the device and don't want to change it, or, you know, the financial impact from actually purchasing a new device, because smartphones are not cheap. And people don't want to have to buy a smartphone every year, maybe even every 5 years, just due to the large cost. So limiting the apps and how you use it are the best items. And I always recommend, if you have an email, it looks a little unusual, you're not sure what that link is in your email. I've been seeing a lot of fake USPS, what they call smishing. So text messages saying, hey, you have a late package. I've been seeing a lot of those. The biggest thing is don't click on it. Don't go to the websites. If you do need to, you can always check on a different device. But even then, if you're not anticipating the message, if you don't feel it's legitimate or you have really no idea why somebody's contacting you, it's likely it's going to be a social engineering attack where they're trying to get you to click on something you otherwise wouldn't.
Yeah, I get those USPS, I think, probably at least every other day. And I suppose during this time of the year, when people are, you know, starting to order a lot more online, that's probably why we're seeing more.
Yeah, the individuals that are trying to take advantage of really our compulsion to click or to find out more, because, you know, I mean, I'm a little curious. I've got a message, hey, there's a package for you. You can't get it. I'm like, ooh, I want to know what that package is. You know, I'm more inclined to be a little bit more interested, or, you know, the holidays, people are shopping for a variety of reasons. And so they kind of take advantage of the timing of the year. And the individuals and groups that do this, they're really good at understanding a lot of that context of what people are doing around the calendar year, what they might even be doing around the week. So, you know, people are busy, for example, on a Monday morning, maybe you're more inclined to click on an email that seems a little bit more urgent than on the end of the week on a Friday.
Yeah. So are there some good third-party security apps to install on, let's say, an older phone?
That's a really, generally, depending on the phone, it can be a little bit more challenging. A lot of the, especially the newer software, and this really depends on how old the phone is. If you have an old enough device, you might not actually be able to install the security software. So that's actually another challenge of having an out-of-date device. But a lot of the programs are limited in terms of what they can see on your device. Mainly because, especially with Apple or iOS devices, they're really given limited access to the information on the phone. So the security software can't necessarily do everything you might want it to do to understand what's running on the device. You can run, they do have antivirus programs or other software that can scan your device to look for unusual applications. Some of those might be useful, but generally that's even a bit more challenging, really, is what are some good security software to run on a mobile device? I really haven't found any that I particularly found useful. I've tried a couple. Granted, I've never tried to legitimately infect my device. That could be another good test. But I haven't found as much benefit from those third-party security programs. Generally, I am relying more on the software development from the maker themselves. And usually that's going to be an Android operating system, or it's going to be an Apple iOS operating system. Those are generally built to help limit the impact if anything's clicked on. And a lot of that security software too, if they're looking for, you know, malicious software, they may not actually be able to understand, well, I clicked on a link for a phishing email. It might not actually be looking at that information that would actually protect you from that kind of attack. And usually those are going to be the more common ones that you're going to see in a smartphone. It's going to be a dangerous link from a text message or from email, where you actually need something else to actually check on. What are the network locations your device is going to? Are those bad? So there might be some options there to understand, to limit some of that network traffic. I haven't tried any myself, but if I were to pick anything, I would probably not be looking for malware directly on my device. I would probably be looking for something to potentially limit the network traffic or what internet resources I could go to if they're able to identify these are usually bad locations to go. These are generally okay. Some of those actually come in the form of like parental control applications.
Sure.
And so those could actually be used for kind of a similar benefit. But I think protecting against those different vectors or locations of attack are probably going to be the best thing because it's usually what's happening. Most people aren't downloading big applications or trying to install third-party software that's going to infect their device. It's usually going to be those phishing links. It is the one benefit of having newer devices, since they do have that app store, is they're curated. Generally, they're a lot of the applications are vetted and reviewed. There are some limitations to that, but it does give a little bit more confidence in terms of the software that you're downloading. It does bring up a lot of people do, especially if you do have an older device, you can do something called rooting your device, which allows you to do more and customize that phone. The danger is that also has additional risks because you can't update it. You could install malicious software. There's a variety of dangers. So a lot of those, I guess, limiters are removed. And when those limiters are removed, that also means whether intentional or accidental, bad software can get on those devices.
Keith in Madison has a question. Let's go there. Keith, hi.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
I'm concerned about using my phone with public Wi-Fi, and you know if there are ways I can stay safe, like for example, at a Starbucks or a McDonald's or you know some public venue where there's free Wi-Fi available. How do I stay secure?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I'd probably recommend this for. Even if you're at home, if you just want to make sure your internet connection is a little bit more private or make sure that no one is able to read the information from your device, my first go-to technology is going to be a virtual private network or VPN. You can get a variety of VPN clients for Android or for iOS. You can get free versions. You can get paid versions. Generally, the paid versions, you're going to get a little bit more for the money. That also could include what I just referred to before is limiting potentially where you go. So a lot of them do have protection features where not only does it allow you to have this virtual private network, so your own basically tunnel where no one can read your internet traffic. They can't see what you're doing, but the VPN might also be able to state, hey, you're trying to get to this internet resource. It looks bad. I'm gonna block that because I don't want you to get infected. I don't want you to visit this website that could be dangerous. So the virtual private networks also have that benefit. But if you're in a public area, it makes sure that your information no one can access. But for the internet provider, even at your home network, generally your internet provider, unless your network is completely encrypted. To the internet, they might be able to see what you're doing. They may be able to see the websites you're going to. That virtual private network also helps to keep that information more private so they can't see that data. So a virtual private network would be my go-to.
And how do you get there? How do you set one up?
Generally, you can, you'll create an account with whatever service you decide to choose. And they'll have applications for smartphones and, Windows, Mac OS operating systems directly on the App Store. And so usually you're going to see them right there. For anyone, I always recommend do a little bit of research into the different VPN options out there, ExpressVPN, NordVPN, ProtonVPN. Those are three of a variety of different virtual private network providers. And you can usually download those apps directly for free from the App Store. Some of those, they have premium services. You might be able to pay for either additional bandwidth, additional protections, but they also may offer some additional services such as password managers or network traffic protection. So they may have some add-ons there, but usually it's going to be in the App Store, and you can even browse to see what apps are there and take a look at, you know, how many people are using them, how many people like them, and there's a variety of other reviews out there too. So lots of great options.
Jesse LeGrew, Chief Information Security Officer at Madison College, our guest today. What tech question do you have? I hope you'll join in. Give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234, or you could email us. The email address, ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Clara Neipertz, our producer today, Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer, A. Emily Ralph, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Taking a look at technology on the show today with our guest, Jesse LeGrew, Chief Information Security Officer at Madison College. Great to have him with us. And you can join in. Give us an email to ideas@WPR.org or phone 800-642-1234. Give a call or shoot us an email. Before we go back to the phones, just one question on location. These days, our phones, computers, other devices are equipped with location technology. And if you ever watch a TV detective show, sometimes they'll find the perpetrator by their where they're located according to their phone. But what are I can't imagine that happening in real life. Maybe it does, but why do we have this location technology, and how's it used?
Yeah, and there's a variety of different kind of location technologies. I think one of the primary reasons people liked using, let's say it's the Find My Phone application or something similar. Let's say people have kids in the house and they just want to know where people are, and being able to keep an eye on whether they're safe or available. I think that's one of the probably initial use cases for a lot of the applications is, do I know where my child is? Are they somewhere that's safe? And if I need to find them, do I know how to get to them? Same thing with any other family member, potentially friend. A lot of those services are really used for that kind of life safety aspect of being able to locate an individual if you really need to in an emergency. But more commonly, the location services are also used by outside parties. So they actually might be used by, for example, advertisers or other services that want to get that location data for a variety of other items, including navigation. So we all have smartphones, and I remember the good old days outside of having a paper map. Maybe you go to MapQuest, you search for a place to go from point A to point B and print it out, and then navigate through this few pages of navigation instructions. Well, now we have a phone that has pinpoint location data from GPS. And so it can help us navigate where we are and know where we're going. And you might get warnings for speed traps or congestion on the road. And so it's increasingly used for navigation and a lot of other utilities. In some cases, that information can be pretty accurate, but there are a lot of times where that data is also inaccurate. So it may not actually be able to give you exactly the location where someone's located. That can be challenging depending on the area. But many times, and we've seen this with the Apple devices, and there's others out there as well, where you can use AirTags, and maybe you lost a device or you lost something that you really want to find. So just like the Find Your Phone app, where you might be able to find an individual, which, you know, is really trying to track down the phone that they're holding or have in their pocket, you can use it for, I lost my luggage. I'm not sure where it is. Where is that? And so now you can look up on an application to find out, maybe it's still at the airport. Maybe it actually never left your original source location. And so you need to find out from the airline where that information is. So there's a lot of interesting use cases for that location data. in the end, it's really trying to track down that device or maybe that person, or to use, you know, a long navigation, which it's, you know, it's hard not to use these days. It's so easy to use and can easily get you to wherever you're going.
Todd in Madison has a comment or question. Let's go there. Todd, hi.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Yeah, I'll try to make this simple. I could get long-winded, but I'm not that techno-savvy about this, about what I'm going to try to ask, so bear with me. I have an Android phone, and I'm probably one of zillions of people with pop-ups saying, warning, viruses, your phone's infected. You need to clean your phone and all this kind of stuff, and it won't go away. I'm just wondering, need I be concerned? Need I do something about it? And how do I get these warnings to go away?
Good question.
Yeah, so I have a few recommendations. So if the pop-ups are happening when you're using a specific application, so let's say you're using, you're browsing the web, and most of the time on an Android phone, you're going to be using Chrome, which is the built-in browser that comes with every Android phone. If your pop-ups are only showing up when you're using Chrome, it could be you may just need to reset your Chrome settings, remove any of the old data in there, because it could be that there could be a program running in the background, or it could just be your browser settings have been changed so that it redirects to places you really don't want it to go. And actually clearing out those settings within Chrome on your Android phone might work out well. And you can do that usually directly through the settings applications on your Android phone. And usually it's going to be called, you know, deleting your cache or resetting your home page. If you do that, it will hopefully reduce the likelihood you're going to see a lot of those different pop-ups. If you're seeing those pop-ups when you're not even using Chrome or using a web browser, and it just seems kind of pervasive and it's popping up all over the place, there's a couple other indicators. It could be there is software installed on your device that's actually generating those pop-ups. It could have actually been something that either came along for the ride when downloading or installing other software, or it could have been other software that was using one purpose, but it might be giving other pop-ups. I'd recommend looking through your applications and uninstalling some of the other apps. And usually for an Android, you can kind of click on an icon and keep it pushed in. It'll give you an option to uninstall. I'd go through and uninstall applications you don't think you need. If you see those pop-ups go away, it was probably one of those applications that caused it. Worst case, if you have a device and you want to make sure that it's as clean as it could be, the other option would be to do a factory reset, which a factory reset is destructive. So if you have pictures on your device, if you have text messages, if you have contact information, you may want to make sure you have that information backed up. If you are using an Android phone, there are options to actually pair that with your Gmail or Google account. If you have one, usually that's set up directly from scratch. But if you don't have it, I'd consider doing that so you can back up those contacts. It'll also back up images and some other data. But if you do have that information backed up, or maybe you don't have anything you need, you can do that factory reset option, which will essentially make the phone just like it came out of the box without any of the additional software installed, and would allow you to kind of start from a known good state. There are possibilities that you can infect or do bad things to those backup areas for those restore features. That's probably a little bit more advanced, but it would be one of the recommendations I'd, if you really had to start from scratch, that's going to be the best way. I just recommend using the backup features that come in directly with the phone or adding your Gmail account to it so you can back up some of your information.
Todd, thanks. Bert in Appleton has a, kind of a related question here. Bert, hello.
Hi. Hi. Enjoying your show. It's been very valuable. Thank you. My question is if a person believes that their phone has been hacked or cloned or infected, and they order a new phone and take it right out of the box, is it possible for that new phone to be hacked by a person who has hacked the old phone?
So can a new phone be hacked in the box, essentially, or right out of the box?
It's a possibility. I'd say usually the biggest risk with a new device is kind of just like the scenario we kind of went over with backing up your information. If the information that you backed up and that's on your, it could be an iCloud account, it could be on a Gmail account, if that was somehow infected or had data that you really didn't want, it could introduce that onto your new phone. So you could effectively be restoring data that actually could be bad, that might be doing bad things on your device. Generally, for any brand new device you're getting from a manufacturer, it's going to be clean. There are always examples that people talk about in terms of if you really wanted to try to find a way to attack somebody, you could put malware or something on one of those brand new devices, repackage it, and then ship it out. I'd say that's going to be a little bit less likely. It's a possibility, but I'd say the most risky thing is actually restoring data from your old device onto your new device. And that's the same with cell phones or laptops or desktops, just because we might bring those inadvertently into that, you know, new, clean, pristine device that we're getting.
Bert, thanks for calling. Robin in St. Paul, Minnesota, your turn. Hi, Robin.
Hello. Thanks for the show. So my question is very, very similar to these other callers. I fell for the scam of clicking on a free Amazon card, and ever since then, never got the card. But got a lot of malware on my phone that I cannot seem to get off. And it happens the minute I unlock my phone, I get pop-ups, advertisements, internet is corrupt, you know, the whole bit, including pornography, which is quite disturbing. And I've taken the phone in to professionals. They cannot seem to get this off. And I'm wondering if this sounds like a case of the factory reset. I did buy a new phone, but I absolutely do not want this transferred, you know, onto the new phone.
Sure.
Yeah, it could be a variety of things. It might just be an application or something that's actually bundled in with your web browser. It's hard to know without actually getting into the details. If you have a new phone and you want to use that new device, what I'd probably recommend doing is importing probably just basic data onto your new device. And usually that's going to be contacts. It may or may not be text messages. So if you did receive a text message that might have had a bad link, I might also recommend don't even import your text messages, your old ones. Just start clean. The biggest thing is usually your contacts. And then start from there. I would probably recommend against restoring applications. So one thing that a lot of phones will offer is when you do backup your data, it will also back up, well, here are the apps you had installed. And so when you start with a brand new clean device, you'll say, hey, by the way, I'm gonna save you a lot of time. I know all the apps you want. I'm gonna go ahead and install all of those. It could be one of those applications is actually what's causing those pop-ups, or there's some other setting that might be causing an issue. So I'd probably also consider going through, and if you have an Android, it's going to be the Google Play Store. If you have an iPhone, it's going to be the App Store. Going through for all the registered applications and either removing the ones that you really don't think you need, or even just clearing them all out and starting from scratch. That'll at least make sure the new device isn't going to have any of that information come in. Because it could be an application, it could be a setting that's within Chrome, but you want to basically restore as little as possible onto that new device. And it's also possible with the old device, it could be Chrome, it could be another application. It's really hard to know. If you do go through the process of one by one uninstalling applications until you feel there's nothing else left, you're still getting the pop-ups, I'd clear out the Chrome information and probably restart the device. Maybe that fixes it, maybe it doesn't. Factory reset should get you there as well. If it doesn't, that's a whole other really, really bad issue, which you don't want, but at least you have that new device. So if you're basically start out with your new device as clean as possible, synchronize only your contacts, and then kind of start from scratch with everything else. But I do recommend going into your Play Store, which you should be able to do either through the web or you should be able to do through your new or old device. Go through and remove any apps that you don't recognize or that you don't think you need. And this could just be a good spring cleaning data. I'm going to remove everything and just add the ones that I want. Most of the day-to-day stuff I think that people use are actually really built into the latest operating systems, and there might only be one or two applications you need to install on top of that.
There you go, Robin. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Taking a look at your technology today, the phones and everything else that you use and that we all use, I guess, in these technology days, with our guest, Jesse LeGru, Chief Information Security Officer at Madison College. Join in with your questions or problems. The number to call is 800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Looking at technology on the show today with our guest, Jesse LeGru, Chief Information Security Officer at Madison College. Questions for Jesse, give a call, 800-642-1234, email to ideas@WPR.org. And let's take a call. Tom in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Tom. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. Yes, I've been bothered by these Microsoft scams, and I now it's getting where I can't close the thing, and it's frozen there. And then what I did is finally did Control-Alt-Delete. Well, it disappeared, but I'm wondering if something is still on it. What should I do? Should I run a big scam, or how do I check if they planted anything on my phone or on the computer?
Yeah, and it sounds like you might be getting it mainly from your computer. One thing I'd recommend is usually for newer versions of Windows, they have the Windows Defender app that you can use for virus protection. It will see some of those pop-ups. It may not see all of it. Most of them are really browser-based. So whether you have Firefox, Chrome, Edge, it's usually going to cause pop-ups through there. What I'd recommend, I'd probably recommend a full virus scan anyway. I think some of the other applications that are going to help a little bit more, at least for your Windows desktop or laptop, is going to be probably SpyBot Search and Destroy or Super Anti-Spyware. Both of those applications are free. They do have, I think both actually have paid versions now. But they will generally help a lot more with those browser-based attacks. They'll also see other information on your system that might be causing different software to start when you log into your computer. They both have done a fantastic job of removing most of that information. I've used them many times throughout the years. Haven't used it within probably the last year, but they've been really, really good applications that are intuitive. They at least were, they may still be free for home use, but you can just hit scan, you can wait, It'll allow you to clean up what they find. And if they do find anything that they can't clean up because maybe it's running in the background, they also have the option to kind of restart and then clean it up the first time your computer reboots. So that's definitely what I'd recommend for your Windows device, just to try and clean up anything that you might have there. Same thing with the Android. If you have an Android or an iOS device, probably Android, I'd recommend removing any apps that don't look familiar, clearing out your browser settings, which might be Chrome or Firefox or Edge. There's a variety of others out there. But also, and this kind of goes with the Windows device as well, they do have restore features where if you know when the pop-up started occurring, you might be able to restore your computer to a previous version. The caveat to that is it also might restore or remove files from your device. So if you have new files you might have created, depending on the version, you also might want to have a backup of your computer. So doing a system restore or doing a factory reset has that challenge of it may remove information you want, primarily files that you created or other content. So I do recommend before going down those routes, see if you can do a backup. Otherwise, you might find there are local computer stores too that will assist you either for a little or a nominal fee to clean up your device. And usually they'll do that for Windows devices, really any device, and mobile devices as well.
Good luck, Tom. Thank you. Mike in Minneapolis, Minnesota, on to you now. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Yes, I have a question about a Facebook account I had that was hacked, and I'd only used Facebook a short time, but had only posted a couple times pictures on there from a trip and that type of thing. But it was hacked when we were visiting relatives in D.C. And one of the things that happened, and I tried to change the password right away, and I was kind of distracted because we were visiting other people. And I think the passwords got changed, but it's a I'd gone through and tried to open my account several times, and I think it still had the old password, or maybe they changed the password. I don't know whoever hacked it, but all I want to do is make it sure that it still shows two pass. I did delete the app, but it still shows two passwords on my password account on my phone, two different ones. So I think they created a new account or something. I don't know, but should I just delete those passwords? Would that help? Or what are the risks involved? I mean, I don't want my friends, I had like a couple hundred friends, I think, that would get a text or something on Facebook saying, you know, Mike suggests donating to this cause or that type of thing, you know?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, if you still do have access to your Facebook account and you're able to log in, there are a couple things that I recommend just to make sure that your Facebook account itself is just protected in case anyone else can log in. One is there is an option in Facebook to log out all sessions. It also lets you see who's logged in the past. If there was somebody logged in, I would go ahead and just sign out all sessions. It means you'll need to sign in again, but then you can sign in, you'll have access, and then you can make sure that no one else is, at least has access to your account. Because even after changing your password, there is the possibility, usually they give you the option, do you want to sign out all the sessions or do you want to continue using, you know, Facebook as you had before? Another thing I'd recommend if you have the capability is they'll have multi-factor or two-factor authentication, and you can turn on text message or if you have an authenticator application like Google Authenticator. SMS tends to be the option that most people select because it's freely available. If you can turn on anything, that will make sure that even if somebody has your password, they can't get into your account without having a code from your device, whether that's delivered through text message or through a separate application. But that'll at least make sure no one else is inside of your account so that you don't have that risk of someone using your account to send spam or some kind of different attack to users that you're connected with. If you do have multiple entries, it sounds like you might be having a password manager that's listing multiple passwords for your account. It could be just one of those, depending on the password manager, they may list, it might give multiple entries if you're using a smartphone application versus a web browser, because they do look a little bit different. You could remove those. The downside is if you don't know your password and it is in that password manager, you may want to either make sure you jot down what the password is so you can re-enter it. Otherwise, you know, you might lose that on that password too. So just make sure you don't accidentally remove your password. Otherwise, you have a different issue.
Mike, good luck. Appreciate your call. I have that two-factor. I get a notice on Facebook, and it's simple. Doesn't take a couple of seconds, and you know, then you're kind of safe. Yeah.
Yeah, it's actually really nice too, because if you are using Facebook or other applications, if you do have the smartphone application installed, it does also give you an indicator where when you're trying to log in with a different device. It might give you an easier option to say, yes, this is me, or no, this isn't. And then you might actually be able to block an attack or allow yourself to get access relatively quickly. So I do recommend turning those features on. It does give you a lot of extra protection. And it can also help when you try to connect new devices in the future.
Tim in Waukesha, we go to you now. Hi, Tim.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Appreciate the call. What can we do for you?
I'm wondering if that WebRoot or WebRoot, is that harmful to the computer? I have a desktop.
Yeah, and so they have the WebRoot security software. WebRoot is... at least from what I can see, I haven't used it myself, so I can't say in terms of how well it does at the job at what it's doing. It is antivirus program for, especially for Windows. It might offer it for other services too. It should do okay. If you are running Windows and you are using Windows 10 or even Windows 11, I probably would recommend actually using Windows Defender that's built in. For a couple different reasons. One, Microsoft is able to see more of the attacks that are on Windows devices, just primarily because they're running the operating system, so they get a lot of that information. The other benefit of it is it's actually built into Windows, so you don't have to pay anything extra for it. So the WebRoot, you might have to pay a little bit extra. It may come with extra services, which could be a benefit too, but it should be... as long as it's the legitimate WebRoot software, it should be okay to run on your home computer. The question is, do you even need it? So if you do have Windows Defender and Windows 11 or 10, you might want to go that route because it could save you ongoing costs.
Tim, thank you. Jerry in Johnson Creek, your turn. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning. I have all Apple products, including a desktop and several iPads and iPhone. I just got a renewal notice for my antivirus software. I've heard people say, well, you don't need that on an Apple product. Could you please speak to that? And then I'll make my decision as to whether I'm going to renew my subscription.
Yeah. So I'll say that any device could potentially get infected. That being said, Apple does have software built into its platforms for Mac OS and iOS for mobile devices to help protect against a variety of malicious software. Could something additional help? Yes. But it's probably going to be minimal in terms of the protections that are already built into the device. For Mac OS devices, so if you're using a laptop or a desktop, they generally do have an option for third-party software and whether it's allowed or denied. Being able to keep all the security features turned on for macOS is going to lessen the likelihood you might have any kind of security compromise. That being said, even without having malware on your device, clicking on a link can be all that it takes. And it's very likely even the antivirus subscription you might be using today may not be able to help with that. So that's kind of the other piece of it. It just takes one internet address in a web browser, and all the protection mechanisms may not assist with it. Personally, I probably wouldn't use a third-party antivirus program, at least for macOS. A lot of the features built in are really designed to help secure that experience, especially if you're able to keep all those features turned on.
There you go, Jerry. I went with Mac a long time ago after some problems with the other system, and I haven't had any trouble in a long, long time. So I'm kind of a Mac person. And what about you? Are you a Mac person? Questions? Give us a call. We're going to take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with Jesse LeGru. I'm Larry Mueller, a Emily Ralph, our engineer today on the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at technology on the program today. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Jesse LeGru. Jesse's the Chief Information Security Officer at Madison College. We've talked a lot about security, but certainly taking all kinds of technology questions, and I hope you'll join in. You can call us at 800-642-1234. Give us a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Jesse, we had Kurt in Stoughton email us. He's planning a trip to Southeast Asia next year and wondering what can he do to use and protect his iPhone? Should he just take a burner?
That's a good question. So depending on the locations that you're going, taking a burner phone or, you know, something without personal information, or at least less personal information, could be a good way to go, really, for anything. One, it limits the challenge if, for whatever reason, I mean, especially if you're traveling internationally, there's a heightened risk of just losing or having a phone stolen. So not taking it with you will assist with that. Outside of that, if you were to take your own device, some things that really could help you along the way. One, you know, limit the data that you have on the device when you take it with you. Any information that you have in your pocket is potentially information that if someone got a hold of your device or was able to find a way to compromise it via wireless or something else, they wouldn't have access to that information. So basically, you know, I'd use airplane mode as much as you can. And this would be whether it's traveling internationally or any other area where you may be concerned for the safety of your device because you're not sure who else is on the wireless or cellular networks that you're connecting to. It gives you a little bit more control in order to browse the web. In addition, if you do have a data plan, if you plan on using the internet, I would recommend using a virtual private network for a couple of different reasons. As kind of discussed previously, it helps exclude what other people can see from your internet traffic. In addition, if you are traveling overseas, one thing you might notice if you're doing online banking or trying to access other services, you may not be able to access them internationally. And so a virtual private network that has an option to select where you're connecting to or connecting from could also give you a benefit for browsing other services. So you can actually connect like you're back in the United States, even though you're not, because that can be a challenge with a lot of internet-based services. They'll see you're coming from a location. They have no idea where you're coming from, and they might block that access. So a virtual private network will help in those instances as well. It's probably not necessary to use a burner phone, but if you want to be extra paranoid, use a burner phone, make sure that burner phone has VPN, and limit any data that you have access to it outside of, you know, any pictures you might be taking if you're doing some sightseeing.
Dennis emailed that for years he used his computer to receive email and web browsing with his Android smartphone powered and log into his Wi-Fi. Since last week on his computer, Outlook has repeatedly asked for his password, the new thing, and wonders what might have changed.
Yeah, so the it could be a variety of reasons why Outlook is prompting for the password repeatedly. It could be a change, and this does happen every now and again. A vendor may make a change to how they deliver services, including how people log into their services. It could have been a change Microsoft also made regarding how often you need to authenticate or type in a username and password to access your device. In many cases, if you are getting repeated prompts to type in your password, it could be an indication someone may be trying to attack your account, or there might be other account issues. Since you are using a Microsoft email account, if you are, when you do sign in for the web interface of your email, near the upper right-hand corner, it's generally gonna have either your picture or maybe your initials, and it'll have an option when you click on it to go to your profile settings. You can actually take a look at where you're signing in from and who's connected. If your account is actually under attack, they have My Sign-Ins, which will list who's connected, from where, when, what application they're using. That could be a really great place to go just to see if you see any sign-in problems. Maybe for whatever reason, there's a different device that has a bad password set, and it's continually trying to type in that bad password, and it's locking your account. That lock is causing your Outlook client to say, hey, by the way, it's not accepting your login. Can you please type it in again? Those things can happen, but looking at those sign-in logs can be extremely helpful just to understand like what's trying to log in. Could be a device, could be somebody attacking your account. It could be a change for Microsoft, but that's the first place I'd go just to understand what's happening. And I think you get you see the last 30 days of sign-ins. So if this has happened, started relatively recently, you should be able to kind of zone in on that particular day and see what was happening at that time.
Good advice. Dawn in Racine emailed in response, and in responding to the gentleman who had unwanted pop-ups that didn't go away, she says you can immediately clear the pop-ups by clicking lower left sideways hamburger, the three lines, to see all the open apps, and then close the windows, that window, or all of the windows that are showing up.
Yep, and that's another good suggestion. One item, if you do restart your computer, it's possible they might come back. And so you might be able to remove it once, but you might need to run a different program to remove it forever. But it does depend. Sometimes the individuals or groups creating these little pop-ups, they might not actually do something so that if you clear it, it actually comes back. But if you are able to actually close those and it seems to stop the activity, keep note in terms of what items you're closing, because it might give you an indication on where those pop-ups are coming from. So it could be from a web browser, or could come from a separate application. You might find out it's actually easy enough to go into add remove programs and remove the app, and all of a sudden all of your problems are solved. So you just never know.
A listener emailed, they use Mac OS and recently have been getting a screen notification that their Mac is infected. If they click on the link, it brings up a web page in the browser, Brave. They're running Bitdefender, and there's no evidence of virus. How did they get rid of this notification?
Yeah, and that could be a variety of issues really based upon a malicious website. So there's a bad website basically that's causing these pop-ups to be generated. One thing I check, and if you're using Safari, it's going to be in your Safari options. Same thing, you know, if you're using Chrome or any other web browser, I'd recommend doing the same thing. Go into your browser settings, take a look at your homepage and what might be sent there. If it's not something that you had specified yourself or nothing that looks familiar, that homepage actually could be what's causing those pop-ups to occur. It can actually show that and generate that from the system preferences icon as well. So it's likely going to be a browser setting from something that was clicked on that was easily changed when it was clicked on. So remove your homepage. In other circumstances, you might just even want to just clear your browser cache and settings. You can reset your Safari, for example, to defaults, which will also remove any extensions. There could be a bad extension that you also have in your browser that could be creating that problem. So even after clearing the homepage, deleting your settings, you might find out, it changed back. It could actually be an extension. So you will see the extension settings in the same area. It'll be a different tab on the right-hand side or near the right-hand side where you can see what extensions are installed. If you do see something that looks a little unusual, you can uninstall or disable them. It is a common item for a web browser. If you see issues, you can usually disable all your extensions, see if the problem solves itself. If it does, well, it's one of those extensions. And then really the puzzle at that point is, well, which one is it? You can remove them all and just start from scratch, or you can go one at a time to see which one actually causes that behavior, but it's likely gonna be some kind of browser extension.
You could join in too. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Give a call, we'll get you out pretty quickly here. Back to location for a minute. Can location data be used to track you without your knowledge or consent?
Yeah, and the short answer is yes. It gets a little bit more complicated with newer versions of mobile devices. Most devices are getting a little bit better in terms of asking for permission when using other pieces of your device. So that could be the camera, could be the microphone, it could be your location data. For newer devices coming out, usually there are going to be more prompts where you need to explicitly allow, you need to click on a button, yes, you can do this, but that wasn't always the case. So if you do have an older phone, if you have an app that was installed quite some time ago, it's a possibility that it may be sharing information that you really never wanted it to share. The best way to go about looking at that is going to be usually in your system settings, whether that's an Android or an Apple device, and take a look at location data. And usually it will outline which apps are able to use your location data or where that information is shared. It could be sharing it once those applications are open or if they're running in the background. And that's also going to be a setting in those in that location data. If you are ever concerned about information being shared when you're at certain locations, the recommendation I would have, outside of just making sure, you know, install only the applications you need, only enable sharing for those applications that really need it, turn on airplane mode. So when you have airplane mode on, it can't share that information. It will not collect that data because it will not be connecting to wireless or to a cellular signal. And it will limit what data can be shared. Or you can also turn off your phone. So a couple different options. If you are in different areas, you want to make sure that none of that information is being stored, use airplane mode or turn your device off.
Mike in Oshkosh has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Mike.
Hello, Larry. I don't know if your expert has got a lot of information on Facebook, but I have been trying for over a week now to put a listing in Facebook Marketplace, and the darn thing keeps wanting to use a address I used to have in France. It will not let me change it. I go into my profile. I try to obliterate everything having to do with France, and I still can't make a posting in Facebook Marketplace. Does he have any ideas?
Oh, that's a really good question. I don't, unfortunately, have any ideas. It sounds like you went ahead and updated as many of the settings that you could. The only other recommendation I could have would be trying to reach out to Facebook directly. Sometimes, and I don't know about Facebook, when you do change your location, they may have options to kind of quote unquote validate or confirm your information, which might be they'll actually send you a mailing or something that you need to, you know, give them a code and make sure that you received and are actually at that address. But outside of that, I don't know if I have another good suggestion. It does seem like you've done most of
pretty
the things
much everything
I would recommend, right? Yeah.
Mike, there you go. Thank you for calling. Well, David in Madison has a Facebook question as well. So let's go there. David, hi.
Hi. Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Every once in a while, me and my wife will talk about buying something. And after we're done talking about it, she'll go back on her Facebook page and what we just talked about. We'll be right there on Facebook. How can we stop that from happening?
So you didn't type anything in. It's like Facebook is hearing you.
Yes, and we didn't have our phones on.
Yeah.
They were locked, so.
Yeah, that's, well, and that's a common item that does come up. There's also a variety of items and articles out there in terms of, is Facebook, for example, listening to your microphone? Are they collecting all of this data without you being aware of it? Generally, the information kind of leans towards no. So Facebook doesn't have a microphone. They're not necessarily snooping on what you're doing throughout the day to generate advertising. There could be a variety of other items that could be listening or could be sharing data with Facebook. So if you do have any kind of application, might have access to your microphone, or it might have access to share data with other applications on your device. You can see it very commonly where if you have somebody in your household, they Google something on one device, it happens to have a pixel for Facebook that gets paired with your Facebook data. And all of a sudden you see it share on a different device that you were never using or talking about. So it could be through any one of these alternative sharing methods that are usually used for marketing purposes to understand user behavior that actually could be sharing some of that information. It's very challenging to really understand what's happening because the environment's really complicated. The only thing I could really recommend is, you know, turn all your devices off. Check your app settings for anything that might be listening, but it is, it could be a variety of things, including if you had other voice activated features in your household. Most of them are designed so that they only trigger the microphone upon hearing a specific command. So for example, hey Siri, hopefully I didn't just activate everyone's iPhone, but if you say a specific phrase, it may note that and then start doing something with data. So usually it's only going to take any kind of recording, sharing, or action upon those activation phrases. That being said, it could be also a different application that could be using that microphone at different times for different reasons and sharing it with other apps. So I do recommend check your device settings, kind of all of them. But if you have any home automation devices, it's also a possibility those may be doing some kind of items and may also have a setting of, and you'll see this with just about anything, kind of curate my experience, give me better data to help suit what I'm looking for. That generally will mean listen more to what I'm doing and what I'm typing on the internet so you can help to give me better search results and share that with third parties so they can help to do the same thing. So a lot of those privacy features can overlap. It could be voice. It's possible it could be something else, but I would recommend to check on those voice activation features. Generally, I turn my voice activation features off just because it could even accidentally start capturing information that it just had never intended. And so turning some of those features off could be useful because even when a device is locked, they still want to take action potentially on what you're saying, even in that locked state.
David, thank you. Charlie in Appleton, do you have a quick question for us?
Yes, sir. I bought some tickets over the phone, and they sent me the ticket information to my phone, and I was going to send that to the printer and print them off as hard copies. But my printer was offline for that moment, so I just sent the tickets to my Safari app. Every once in a while for the last week, I would check to make sure that, I had them stored in there, and they were stored in there. But just today, I looked, and they were gone. And I'm wondering, I don't know what I did, but is there a way of retrieving them?
Hmm.
It depends on where you receive the tickets from. Most of the time, for a lot of the ticket applications, if you have the link either from an email or a confirmation, you should still be able to load that ticket. Because a lot of times they're usually going to be with a barcode or a QR code, because they're anticipating individuals are going to come through and be electronically checked in. So you should be able to hopefully get that information back if you still have that original email. If you don't have that information, it might be a little bit more challenging. If you have no receipt, if there's no other data to take a look, you may not be able to find that info. One thing I also recommend, if you just want to be extra paranoid in terms of whether you can access the link, if it is by QR code or barcode, another item that also works, and this generally will work for just about any application, you can also do a screen capture of your phone, which means you can actually just bring up the picture. Because as long as they can scan that data on entry, you actually don't necessarily need the quote-unquote original ticket. You just need that barcode. So if you are able to get back in, you might want to do a screen capture of your phone. And that way, you'll always have it in your photos if you can't get back to the web page.
Ah, very good. Very good idea. Charlie, thank you and good luck. Appreciate your call. And, boy, Jesse, thank you. We covered a lot of things today. I really appreciate it, and we'll look forward to another visit from you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Jesse LeGrew, our guest today, Chief Information Security Officer at Madison College. We'll have him back, and we'll do this all over again. Tomorrow on the show, we learn why one doctor thinks we should take a more holistic approach to treating our bodies. And we learn how to nourish our bodies and our souls with good food during the holiday season. That's tomorrow at 11. In the meantime, thanks for listening and stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.